Chapter 23. Israel Hands. The wind, serving us to a desire, now hauled into the west. We could run so much the easier from the northeast corner of the island to the mouth of the north inlet. Only, as we had no power to anchor, and dared not beach her till the tide had flowed a good deal farther, time hung on our hands. The coxswain told me how to lay the ship to. After a good many trials I succeeded, and we both sat over another meal. "This here's an unlucky ship, this Hispaniola, Jim," said Hans, blinking. "There's a power of men been killed in this Hispaniola. A sight of poor seamen, dead and gone since you and me took the ship to Bristol. And I'd take it kind if you'd step down into that there cabin and get me a bottle of wine, Jim. This here brandy's too strong for my head." Now the coxswain's hesitation seemed to be unnatural. And as for the notion of his preferring wine to brandy, I entirely disbelieved it. The whole story was a pretext. He wanted me to leave the deck, so much was plain, but with what purpose I could in no way imagine. His eyes never met mine. They kept wandering to and fro, up and down, now with a look to the sky, now with a flitting glance upon the dead O'Brien. All the time he smiled, putting his tongue out in the most guilty, embarrassed manner, so that a child could have told he was bent on some deception. I was prompt with my answer, however, for I saw where my advantage lay, and that with a fellow so densely stupid I could easily conceal my suspicions to the end. "Some wine," I said. "Far better. Will you have white or red?" "Well, I reckon it's about the same to me," he replied. "All right," I answered. "I'll bring you port, Mr. Hans, but I'll have to dig for it." With that I scuttled down the companion with all the noise I could, slipped off my shoes, ran quietly along the sparred gallery, mounted the forecastle ladder, and popped my head out of the fore companion. I knew he would not expect to see me there, yet I took every precaution possible, and certainly the worst of my suspicions proved too true. He had risen from his position to his hands and knees, and though his leg obviously hurt him pretty sharply when he moved, for I could hear him stifle a groan, yet it was at a good rate that he trailed himself across the deck. In half a minute he had reached the port scuppers and picked out of a coil of rope a long knife, discolored to the hilt with blood. He looked upon it for a moment, thrusting forth under his jaw, tried the point upon his hand, and then, hastily concealing it in the bosom of his jacket, trundled back again into his old place against the bulwark. That was all I required to know. Israel could now move about. He was armed. And if he had been at so much trouble to get rid of me, it was plain that I was meant to be the victim. What he would do afterwards, whether he would try to crawl right across the island from North Inlet to the camp among the swamps, or whether he would fire Long Tom, trusting that his own comrades might come first to help him, was, of course, more than I could say. Yet I felt sure that I could trust him in one point, since our interests jumped together, and that was in the disposition of the schooner. We both desired to have her stranded safe enough in a sheltered place, so that, when the time came, she could be got off again with as little labor and danger as might be. And until that was done, I considered that my life would certainly be spared. While I was thus turning the business over in my mind, I had not been idle with my body. I had stolen back to the cabin, slipped once more into my shoes, and laid my hand at random on a bottle of wine. And now, with this for an excuse, I made my reappearance on the deck. Hans lay as I had left him, all fallen together in a bundle, and with his eyelids lowered, as though he were too weak to bear the light. He looked up, however, at my coming, knocked the neck off the bottle, like a man who had done the same thing often, and took a great draught of the wine and spoke with the most unusual solemnity. "For 30 years," he said, "I've sailed the seas, and seen good and bad, better and worse, fair weather and foul, provisions running out, knives going, and what not. Well, now I tell you, I never seen good come a goodness yet. Him that strikes first is my fancy. Dead men don't bite. Those are my views. And now the tide's made good enough. You just take my orders, Captain Hawkins, and we'll sail slap in and be done with it." All told, we had scarce 2 miles to run, but the navigation was delicate. The entrance to this northern anchorage was not only narrow and shoal, but lay east and west, so that the schooner must be nicely handled to be got in. I think I was a good, prompt subaltern, and am very sure that Haynes was an excellent pilot, for we went about and about and dodged in, shaving the banks, with a certainty and neatness that was a pleasure to behold. "Now," said Haynes, "look there. There's a spot to beach a ship in. Fine, flat sand." "And once beached," I inquired, "how shall we get her off again?" "Why so," he replied. "You take a line ashore there on the other side at low water, take a turn about one of them big pines, bring it back, take a turn around the capstan, and lie to for the tide.